May be seated. The second case for oral argument this morning is Paul Patterson versus Plowboy LLC. Marty Jackley is present arguing on behalf of the petitioner, Mr. Patterson. And Robert Ryder is arguing on behalf of the respondent, Plowboy LLC. Each side will have 20 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Jackley, you'll have 10 minutes for rebuttal. The warning light will come on at 2 minutes when you have 2 minutes left in your argument. With that, Mr. Jackley, you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel. Appellant defendant is requesting this court to reverse the trial court based upon three very important and distinct principles. In the first instance, the authority to remove an obstruction in a section line roadway rests with the township. 31329 makes that clear, as well as this court's decision in DuVille. The second issue is a genuine issue of material fact of whether or not this farm trail in question is an improved or an unimproved road. And the third genuine issue of material fact is whether or not this constitutes an unlawful obstruction that must be removed pursuant to 31-18-1. The authority to determine and remove an unlawful obstruction rests with the township under SDCL 31-32-9. That issue is preserved in the record on page 75 and 76. The DeVille v. Christensen case was an unimproved section line case on mandamus. It was a case where, of course, the defendant was the township. Of course, in this instance, the defendant is an adjoining landowner that put up a gate. The issue in DeVille of whether a road is opened or improved is discretionary function for the township, not proper for the court on mandamus. The township in the present case has not designated the farm trail at issue as improved, and neither does the road map that it produces. The road map is Exhibit A to Patterson's affidavit on page 43. The township has the duty and the authority to remove an obstruction, such as a fence, a gate, crop, or other obstructions. The township in this case has not been requested to do so. Therefore, mandamus would not be proper. With respect to the second issue, SDCL 31-25-1.1 sets forth the two requirements for an unimproved road. The first requirement, not commonly used as a public right-of-way. These facts are clearly genuine issues of material fact. They should have been looked at in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, appellant defendant. And perhaps the fact that they're genuine in dispute is best shown by the photographs in this case. I would call the court's attention to Exhibit I and J of Defendant Rob Schonsberg's supplemental affidavit. It's page 190 and 191 of the record. It clearly shows a farm trail, not unlike the trail that this court addressed in State v. Tracy. I would also call the court's attention to Exhibit F, page 187 of the record. Plaintiff, not defendant, has cross-fenced the section line. Literally about 500 feet from the gate, there's a cross-fence with no gate. This is literally a farm trail that leads to nowhere. It doesn't lead to 281, a maintained road, because of the cross-fence and terrain.
Mr. Jackie, let me ask you this. Do you think under the statute 31251.1 that you've got an obligation to show both that it was not commonly used and never altered?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And the basis for that is the common principle of burdens of proof. It is the plaintiff, appellee, that has requested the court for affirmative relief. That affirmative relief is to declare this essentially an improved road, and furthermore, to declare that an obstruction needs to be removed from that road. Under Schaefer and all this court's precedents, when a plaintiff asks for affirmative relief, the plaintiff bears that burden, not the defendant. Furthermore, under the summary judgment standard that this court is well aware of, any and all genuine issues of material fact need to be taken in a light most favorable to the non-moving party. And it's based upon those principles, I believe it is in fact the plaintiff's burden and not the defendant's.
Well, let me ask it like this. Regardless of whose burden it is, do you think there have to be fact questions both as to whether the road is commonly used and as to whether it's been there's been some improvement or altered from its natural state? Or
yes.
Do you think there's a fact question, if you create a fact question on common use or lack of common use, that that's enough to show unimproved road?
I think based upon my reading of 31-25-1 and the fact that there's an and in there would require essentially a fact issue on one of those as opposed to both of them.
So you don't think there needs to be a question of fact on both of those elements?
No.
Common use and altered from its natural state?
No, and I base that in part on Tracy and some of this other court's precedents. But there is fact questions on both of them. There's a fact question on public use. Essentially, whether or not the public uses this, the evidence in this record is it's not public use. It's an adjacent landowner, Mr. Patterson. The evidence in the record isn't that he commonly uses it. The evidence in the record, especially taken in a light most favorable to the defendant, is a couple times a year he goes and farms it. It's a farm trail. Secondly, there's some issue in the record about hunting trespassers. There's a letter that was written regarding concerns of hunting trespassers. Hunting trespassers should not constitute common public use, and if they do, it's still a question of fact, genuine issue, a question of fact. But hunting trespassers can't hunt big game on a section line, and as this court made clear in Tracy, they can't hunt an unimproved road. And furthermore, this is a road to nowhere. It's cross-fenced not by the defendant. It's not the defendant in an unlocked large swing gate that's blocking access. It's actually the plaintiff with a cross fence 500 feet down the farm trail. Furthermore, if the court examines the facts associated with this farm trail in public use, there's a mud bog about 50 feet west of an unfunctioning culvert. This road at times of the year is not passable. Again, taking the facts in a light most favorable to the defendant, it's not used by the public certain times of the year, not unlike the Tracy decision with the Ombach party that hit the slough. And again, going back to, of course it's not public use because this road doesn't lead to anywhere. It, because of the cross fence and terrain, you can't take the beginning of this farm trail and reach an actually maintained road, which would be on Exhibit A, page 43, it would be Avenue 281.
Regardless of whether or not the culvert is functioning, how can you argue that the land was never altered from its natural state if we have a culvert?
I would cite the court back to the Tracy decision. The Tracy decision makes clear that it has to facilitate travel. In fact, what the Tracy decision said, improved for purposes of facilitating vehicle passage requires the improvement to be in the nature of intentional enhancement of the natural terrain's utility for travel or adaption which will permit travel where it was not previously possible. That culvert doesn't function appropriately. Those are genuine issues of material fact. Taken in a light most favorable to the defendant, is not appropriate for summary judgment. There's a picture in the record showing the mud bog literally 50 feet from that culvert. At times of the year, it's not passable, certainly if there's water.
Whether it's currently functional, is that really the question, or is it the purpose for why it was put there in the first instance that we look to?
It's hard to look to, well, the purpose would again go back to a genuine issue of material fact. And I say that because in this record, what this court has to look at is about 40 years ago, the plaintiff, with arguably a conflict of interest at a minimum, the clerk of the township board, requested to have a culvert. He put it in. The township didn't put it in. There's no indication in the record of where it was supposed to go. The only thing in this record shows that at least the purpose is not functioning, at least not functioning to the point that this road is passable, to the point where it would satisfy the Tracy interpretation of the statute.
So Mr. Schoenberg placed gravel on a portion of the road. He acknowledged that in his affidavit. How's that not an improvement?
A couple different reasons. First of all, it was gravel placed on a temporary situation for a construction project that has been completed. Secondly, it's just at the front end of it in relation to going to his buildings. And as this court had indicated in Tracy, not just a piece or a portion needs to be looked at. So while the front end had some temporary gravel placed on, the gravel is still there. He admitted that in his affidavit. It doesn't satisfy the purposes of what the Tracy interpretation is on vehicle travel because, number one, you can't get past further down because of a mud bog, and you certainly can't get past further down to a road because it's cross-fenced without a gate by the plaintiff.
Mr. Jackley and Tracy, we cited an earlier case, Sponheim, and as I'm sure you're aware, we listed a series of potential improvements, grading, graveling, culverts, that sort of thing. I'm interested to know, and I'll ask it to the other side as well, I'm interested to know, are those, would you read those to be an illustrative list, or rather a list that constitutes a per se improvement? If there are culverts, then we know what's improved. Or is it rather just a list of illustrative things that could be or could not be dependent upon an evaluation of the entire evidentiary record?
I feel it's a list of things that could be, and the reason that I state that is if you look to the two attorney general opinions that are cited, the one that's General Meyer-Henry, AG opinion 85-40, when he goes into obstructions can include farming or altering grade as factual determinations. And so as you look at the different bodies of law, there are different things that can obstruct a section line road. There are different things that can constitute an improvement. If you look to Tracy, you know, essentially there's talk of road beds and those type of things. I think you have to look at what is actually done, what the intent is, and what the effect is. If it doesn't make it passable, I don't think it satisfies, that essentially it satisfies that particular prong of 3125.1.1. Further looking at AG opinion 1801, issue number 2, specifically says whether the farming, fencing, or altering the grade of any portion of a section line highway violates SDCL 31-18-1 and that denies the general public access to the section line highway is a factual determination. Remember, we're here today because there was a partial grant of summary judgment. In summary judgment, there can't be a genuine issue of material fact. All the facts must be taken in a light most favorable to the defendant here, the non-moving party. Summary judgment is an extreme remedy really designed to take out frivolous defenses. There are genuine issues of material fact of whether a 40-year-old unfunctioning culvert satisfies Tracy. Clearly, this is not a maintained road with a roadbed. Clearly, it's not on their maintenance list. The township hasn't designated it a maintenance road or an approved road. If you look at Exhibit A, which is a township's own map, it's not an approved road. These all go back to factual questions, not appropriate for summary judgment. And I think it's important to again go back to, as you mentioned, an obstruction. It's not for the courts in the first instance to essentially become the township road police. It's for the township. The township should be put on notice. The township should then make a determination of, with respect to its duty, whether it needs to remove an obstruction. That's not what's happened here. A trial court has made determinations of genuine issues of material fact. It has declared a road an improved road based upon that, and it has further gone ahead and ordered that an obstruction be removed without any say from the township, with a township map that does not have this as an improved road.
I'm trying to understand that argument. I think you're talking about the first argument that you were making here today seemed to be suggesting that the court could not take this action without the township being involved or being a party, or was that raised below? I'm trying to follow that, and I'm not sure I got that argument from your briefs.
It was raised below, I believe, in the briefing, and I would specifically cite the court to page 75 and 76. I believe that's contained in defendant's proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. If one examines 32-9, it clearly places the duty on the township. And I would further cite DeVille for the reason that, you know, how the DeVille case came about is there's a dam and an unimproved section line, and the township refused to do anything about it. And that's why in DeVille, the plaintiff sued the township. It wasn't adjoining landowners because it's the duty of the township. This court said it had authority under mandamus because it was not a discretionary function. It was a statutory function requirement of a township to remove obstructions. So I cite DeVille for two reasons when it comes to that. Number one, declaring that it's an improved road is really a discretionary function that should be left to the township board. Courts shouldn't be making determinations of whether roads are improved or unimproved. That's a discretionary determination statutorily placed at the foot of a township. And the reason for that is when you start declaring roads improved, it triggers a lot of different things. It triggers maintenance requirements. It triggers liability situations. Those are significant things that the township board or the whatever the governing entity would be if it's not a township road, if it's a county road or what have you. Secondly, the duty to remove an obstruction, just like in DeVille, that case came about as a mandamus case because the township didn't act. In this instance, the township's nowhere to be seen in the record. What this court has in the record are competing affidavits of what the township position is, which are genuine issues of material fact that should be taken in the light most favorable to the defendant. And clearly, there's nothing in the record that the township has been asked to do anything with an oversized, unlocked swing gate. And so mandamus wouldn't be appropriate here, which is why I'm suggesting to the court with the first issue that it should be reversed and remanded back because it's not the courts that have authority over this, the first instance, it's the township. The township process should occur. If the township refuses to act and the plaintiff feels that it should have acted, just like in DeVille, it has a right to go forward and to file an action of mandamus and have a determination of whether or not this is an unlawful obstruction, looking again at all the facts, such as it mentioned in the AG opinions. Because again, 3118.1 gives the public the right to travel. If it's unlawfully obstructed, it's obstructed, it's not inappropriate. Or if it's unlawfully obstructed, it's inappropriate. And I would suggest to this court that it's a factual determination, but an unlocked, oversized swing gate on a farm trail is not an unlawful obstruction. This gate has never been locked, and it's frankly a swing gate to make it easier, and it's also an oversized one. It's not a 16-foot gate, it's a 20-foot gate. So it's based upon that I would suggest it's not an obstruction, but it's not for this court or a trial court to make that initial determination. It's for the township board. The township board to be placed on notice is what the statute calls for, to make a determination. It has a duty then to act, and if it doesn't act appropriately, a mandamus case should be brought.
Let me ask you, Mr. Jackley, about 54B. I know you argued that in your initial brief and seem to have conceded it in the reply brief. We accepted this as an intermediate appeal, so takes that part of the issue, 54B issue, off the table. But the issue relates to, let's assume we find this is, or the court correctly determined this was an improved road and couldn't be obstructed. If we make that determination, have you essentially abandoned the argument that the trial court really went beyond what its order for summary judgment on an interim basis would have been by entering this order requiring the gate to be removed?
Part of my answer would depend upon the timing. And the reason I say that is, you know, right now we're up here on an intermediate appeal. There's a stay of the trial court's decision. Obviously, if this court makes a determination that this is an improved road, there are a couple things that the defendant will need to do. Number one, the defendant will need to go back to the county and ask for permission for a gate on this road. The other thing that the defendant will need to do is perhaps look at requesting permission for a cattle guard or put up an additional fence to address the issue. So you're right. It was essentially abandoned because that there's a stay of the court's judgment. If the court only gives us 20 days to address that with the county, which requires, of course, some of the statutes require a majority of the adjoining landowners to agree to allow a gate, that may take time. And so I guess I would indicate that in the event it's this court's determination that this is an improved road, which obviously we feel is a factual question, and if this court determines that this is an unlawful obstruction, which again we feel is a fact question, and lifts its stay, We feel there does need to be a 54B analysis because of the different things that would need to occur.
Wouldn't that be the first thing that we would confront? In other words, let's say the reply brief doesn't say what it says, and your initial argument does say what it says, which is that appellate jurisdiction is only one part of 54B. The other part is the enforceability as an initial matter. And so one possible disposition, though it may be unsatisfying to everybody, but one possible disposition we could have at our as a potential option is to say, no, we'll accept your initial argument. Rule 54B does mean that finality is required for enforcement, and if you don't have it, you can't enforce it. Vacate the circuit court's decision requiring immediate enforcement, remand the case for further proceedings. That may not be satisfying to anybody, but it seems like it's an option.
Well, I'll have you reply to that question rather than arguing it at this point.
Yes. Certainly that's an option. All right, thank you.
Mr. Rector, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the court. Bob Ryder, I'm an attorney in chair, and Jason Rumsa, my partner, is with me. We've worked on this file together. I'm going to present the argument today. We represent Paul Patterson. He's a farmer down in Jones County. Mr. Jackley represents a more commercial operation. They have a hunting lodge and so there is somewhat a competing interest between what I might consider the people that make a living off the land versus people that make a living by bringing hunters in to utilize the land. There's room for both of them. There's room for both of those people to be protected under the law and to have what they're entitled to. Mr. Patterson wanted a road without a big gate, and there's photos in the file. He was anxious about the fact that this big gate, and there's photos that Mr. Jackley took showing it wide open, but there's photos that are in the record that show my client with his farm equipment trying to has to stop in front of the gate. Part of the equipment's still on the road. It's a north-south, well-maintained road. And so it doesn't really have anything to do with the merits of the case as much as it does the motivation behind Mr. Patterson in saying, I don't believe that Mr. Jackley's client followed the law and has the right under the statute to fence this road and to gate the road.
Mr. Jackley argued that your client should have started by going to the township and having them order the gate removed. Tell me why that's wrong.
Because the statute only authorizes Mr. Jackley's client to fence the road and to gate it if he can prove two things. That it's an unimproved road. And it's an unimproved road because it's not commonly used and it hasn't had any enhancements. And if it isn't, he does not have authority. There's a difference between our case where we're talking about fencing and gating and the case in Chamberlain where there was a dam that they constructed. And there's no statute that talks about dams, but there is a statute that talks about fencing and gating. And his client had to comply with that and is only able to advantage himself of that statute if he can prove, and the burden is on him, it is not on us. He has to prove it is an unimproved road. He has to prove that those two elements that the statute requires.
So is it your argument that if anyone should have gone to the township board to start, it should have been his client rather than your client?
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, his client did go to the township board, apparently, and asked the township board to declare it a no-maintenance road. And under the law in South Dakota, if you declared a no-maintenance road, then he'd be able to, or the township more particularly, put a sign up there at the entrance to where the road comes into toward his hunting lodge. It says, no travel, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but says, no travel, danger, no maintenance road, something of that nature.
So,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
so neither your client nor his client went to the township board. And his argument is essentially the courts have no role because neither of you gave the township board the opportunity. Your response?
Well, excuse me. My response is part of our request in this was a declaratory judgment. And part of what we'd asked the court was to declare that this is not an unimproved road. And Mr. Jackley argues that you have to declare, or the court does, that it's an improved road. No, quite to the contrary. That is not mandated by the statute. The statute says the only way Mr. Jackley's client gets to fence that road and gets to put a gate on that road is if it is an unimproved section line road. And
but who gets to tell him that?
Can
your client do that as a private right of action, or is it really something that can be enforced exclusively by a political subdivision like the township? Because I want to hear your answer, I'll shut up. But because it may well be, I suppose it's possible that you're right. I'm not saying you are, but you could say, or there could be a scenario where you're right. He doesn't have the authority. And the question becomes, but who gets to tell him that? Can it be your client, or can it only be the township?
Well, I think our client has a right to ask the court to declare the rights and responsibilities between the parties. And I don't think that I would argue, and I don't believe the law requires or compels the township to step in.
But of course, what really brought this case to us was an injunction that required action in a relatively short period of time. So it's not just the declaratory act, judgment action that we're dealing with here.
And frankly, that's on me, Your Honor. When I read again Judge Mayer's decision and her oral pronouncement of that from the bench, she didn't mention the 30 days. I'm the guy that put that in, and that's on my shoulders. Obviously, I was seeking some sort of more prompt remedy. And as Mr. Jackley pointed out, and this court did, by what it had done relative to the stay. I can't object to what occurred in that regard. So to get back to your question, the court can declare it. And what I really hope, and what I really ask, is that we don't get mired in the argument of, is this an obstruction or is it not an obstruction? Because that has nothing to do with it. If you look at when you looked at it, and I'm sure you've already looked at the transcript, Mr. Jackley keeps going back to Judge Mayer and saying, are you saying it's an obstruction? She said, I don't have to find that. And then it goes back again and again and again. Well, he wasn't getting the decision he wanted because she didn't need to declare it as an obstruction. She just needed to determine and judge the merits of had Mr. Jackley's client sustained its burden of proving that this is an unimproved road.
On the topic of judging the merits, what standard should the circuit court judge apply to, regardless of whose burden it is, to the topic of common use or the alteration topic? Let's start with common use. What standard should the court apply to determine, as a matter of law, based upon undisputed material facts, that something is commonly used?
Your Honor, her statement on the record is best served, but the evidence was undisputed that our client uses that road regularly. And it isn't just a random drive his pickup down to look at his crops. They move equipment just like the photos show. So he commonly uses that road to access his property. It is the only access he has to that property. Only access. So, and then Mr. Jackley's client brought up the fact that they believe there were hunting trespassers that went down that road. Well, other people use it then, but the hunting trespass law is a separate, distinct law from the one involved herein. And I would argue that the hunting trespass law speaks more to the landowner's right relative to people that come upon their property, even if it is the section line. Versus this case, it is the landowner having the ability to access his property without necessarily having the road in, the section line road in, fenced and gated. And if I can mention one more thing that I thought of when Mr. Jackley was giving his argument, this case is so far different than the Tracy case. Be reminded that in Tracy, the only improvement, you might say, on that road was the farmer had driven its equipment down the road, and then they couldn't drive it all the way down the section line road, but they drove it after they went out around the water area. They drove it down the road further on the next side. That was just a trail that developed by the usage by the farmer. In this case, our client, now, sure, he's on the township board. Well, that's pretty common. If you own property in the township and there's a township board, a conflict of interest. Every township supervisor probably has a conflict of interest just by virtue of the nature. It is the most local and intimate sort of position there is, argue.
Can I interrupt? So if I hear your argument, Mr. Bray, you're saying your clients use from time to time in the course of raising, cultivating crops, and maybe some hunters who may or may not be hunting lawfully, that will constitute, and let's say that's undisputed. We have that. It is what it is. That will satisfy the legal standard of commonly used as a public right-of-way.
Yes.
Okay.
What, if any, impact does the cross fence that Mr. Jackley referred to, a cross fence being put up by your plaintiff, do you see that as impacting our analysis here? And if not, why not?
Thank you, Your Honor. No, I do not believe it is of any consequence. The issue involved is the township section line road from the main north-south gravel road that's shown in the photo into where my client enters his land. That is what the litigation we brought involved. And it involved that part of the road. If you go on section line roads, and if his argument is valid, you could go miles upon miles upon miles right over the hill from the Plowboy property. There's this Bull Creek, which is a large creek that can't be crossed, in our opinion. And he had no other way in. So it's not like you're looking at a Highway 83 that's traveling 200 miles from Pierre to the North Dakota border. No, this was a road that purposefully was there to allow, I would argue, Mr. Jackley's clients to access their property, but for our client to access his property as well.
And that's the way I read it. So why is that common use as a public right-of-way? It seems to me that it's used more as a private right of access for a road that ultimately goes nowhere.
Well, please the court, under what the statute, as the court's aware, every section line
of
is,
yeah.
And so really that's why we have the right. It's on a section line. And some of these cases that Mr. Jackley cited didn't involve section lines. They involved private roads. One of the ones out in the Black Hills, it was a private road where people had gone across the pasture or the prairie. That's not involved in this case. This is a case where our client, sure, it was 30 years ago, but he spent the money to buy a culvert to put under that road. Then there was grading on that road. This isn't just a farm trail. This isn't like the trail in Tracy. This is a situation where our client took it upon himself to make sure he could access. He made those improvements in that road. So we did the culvert. We did with conjunction with the neighbor who then owned the property, did the grading of the road. And, you know, grading of the road, I'm not an engineer for the Department of Transportation, but when you look at those photos and you look at the one with the culvert, you can see that there's been grading on that road. So Mr. Jackley says, these are all disputed material facts. No, they're not. This bog in the middle of the road, there was no evidence in the record that says that there were occasions when you cannot use that road. That is supposition, speculation, guesswork, conjecture. The second part of that is the road itself was improved by Mr. Jackley's client. Now, they improved it for their access up to their lodge, but it was graveled, it was widened. I mean, when you take the sum of the parts on this, I mean, I've driven down there, I've looked at it. You drive in the first, you know, quarter of a mile to Mr. Jackley's client's place, there's a nice road. But then it stops at it, pulls in to this lodge. But then after that is where this culvert's located that our client put in. And after that is where there was the grading that occurred, all intended to make sure Mr. Patterson was going to be able to go over to his property and take his planter in, harvest it if he's harvesting it, or allow somebody else to harvest it, put chemical on, put fertilizer on. He's a farmer. He wanted to have that access, and he didn't want to have to park. I mean, this doesn't relate necessarily to the issues, but this isn't Mr. Patterson trying to do something other than protecting his rights to access his property without jumping through some hoops that Mr. Jackley's client decided they could do even though they weren't statutorily authorized to do it. And that's the issue that is before the court. And Mr. Jackley did a nice job of raising other sorts of issues, and I went through in preparation for this argument and just looked at some of those. And the isolated tract issue, he raised that in circuit court, didn't bring it up here. Cattle being trailed down the road, he never fenced out anything. I mean, that's just looking for ways to solidify their argument. The law in South Dakota, as we cited it to you, says the owner of the cattle has the responsibility if they're going to trail it down the road. The old fence east of the section 9, there is a dispute still pending between our clients relative to what I would call the boundary line between our properties. And it's a north-south boundary line. And Mr. Jackley's client fenced it. And the question is, because it's a section line too, the question is, where did he fence it? And should we have had to pay for half of the fencing? And questions of that nature. Those, I'm sure, Judge Mayer will get an opportunity to resolve if and when the matter comes back to her.
So I want to go back to that, Mr. Ryder, the counterclaims that are still outstanding in this case. One of those, as I understand, maybe there's an allegation that there was an agreement as to how wide the gate needed to be. That seems to be kind of tied into this issue of the obstruction. You made the comment earlier that you suggested 30 days to remove the gate. Are you saying you're satisfied with this court just making a determination on the court's summary judgment order? And in terms of timing of, assuming we affirm that, in terms of timing of the gate, you're not asking for 30 days, or you don't think that's necessarily an appropriate determination at this point?
Your Honor,
I guess I want to understand your position.
Well, I appreciate that. And my response would be, since the court has taken it as an intermediate appeal, we would think that the court and then Judge Mayer particularly could have the right, does have the right to say under her order on remand or this court's affirmation of her order that the gate must be removed within 30 days or such period of time as the court might
establish. Even though there's this outstanding issue of how wide the gate should have been or whether there was an agreement.
If I might, Your Honor, in that regard. Settlement negotiations are just that. They're not admissible. That was my next on my list of the things that were raised by Mr. Jackley that have nothing to do with the case. The settlement negotiations between my former partner and Mr. Jackley, he believes they agreed to something, and she believes they did not agree to anything. Regardless, they are settlement negotiations. They are not admissible, and so they, we would argue, are not appropriate for consideration. And one of the reasons that...
Your time's up. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You may proceed with your rebuttal, Mr. Jackley.
Your Honors, I'd like to start with responding to a question that Justice Myron asked, and that was kind of the interplay with 3125.1.1 and whether or not, the way I interpret it is, do you look at that in isolation, or do you have to look at the chapter as a whole? And I would encourage you to look at the chapter as a whole. In other words, there has to be an enforceability component, and that enforceability component is 31-32-9. We know from looking at the public right-of-way statutes, 31-18-1 says the public has a right to travel these section lines, and you can't unlawfully obstruct them. The enforceability part of that in this instance rests squarely with the governing body over the road, which is the township. 31-32-9 specifically states, and I quote, "The governing body or board having charge of any street, road, or highway shall cause rock, stone, glass, and other obstructions placed in such street, road, or highway to be removed therefrom." That's the enforceability of all of this. That's the legislature speaking to that and giving that enforceability component not to the courts, not to the attorney general, but it gives it to the township board. If somebody believes the township board doesn't fulfill that duty, they have an ability, which happened in the DeVille case. You can bring a mandamus action because it's not a discretionary function to remove that. It's a required function. And so I would, again, go back to please don't read SDCL 31-25-1.1 in isolation. There is no enforceability component to it. It does give a basis of why you can place a fence over an unimproved road. This is a farm trail and it is an unimproved road.
Well, 3125.1 does have a criminal sanction attached to it. It's a class 2 misdemeanor.
That's fair.
If they fail to take the gate down and there's a determination by someone in a law enforcement capacity that they should, so.
But to arrive at that, what first has to happen is part of that enforceability is you have to go back to the determination that it's not appropriately there.
And yeah, I agree. I understand your argument. I think that there's a component to it may well be, I mean, we'll see, but 3125.1.1 also talks about enforcement by someone other than a private party, is my only thought.
And I think much like the mandamus decision, there comes a point if the township doesn't act or if somebody doesn't listen to what the township is, I look at that misdemeanor as just a continuation of the enforceability. If the township board says you shall remove it and you don't remove it, it attaches criminal responsibility. Justice Salter asked a question about the standard for commonly used by the public, and I feel like Rudy Giuliani and say, well, just use the usual one. I don't have a standard for you. But what I can tell you is that it is not having a road that is cross-fenced 0.2 miles from a gate. It is not when it's a adjoining landowner using it as essentially a private easement. That's not the public. Or hunting trespassers that don't have a right to shoot big game down a section line or hunt an unimproved road. That's not common use by the public envisioned by the legislature.
So I want to go back to the question of, do you have to show both or one or the other under this the language of the statute itself, the 3125.1.1? And I understood you to be arguing that in your view, if there is a disputed fact on just one of them, even if the other one was established, that it still would not be considered an improved or an unimproved road.
Here's how
I'm not sure how you get there, and I don't know that I see that in the Tracy case that you referred to.
Okay, so thank you, Justice. The way I read the statute is with the "and," it would look like that essentially, you know, whoever this court determines has the burden, that there has to be a factual issue on both. I think that's the statute. But then if you look at the Tracy decision, I think it confuses that, and that was the basis for my answer. So the way I interpreted Tracy, of course, Tracy, there, it doesn't appear that there was a – it just doesn't appear that the common usage part of it was addressed, that it was based upon the other aspects of it. And so that was the basis of my answer, right, wrong, or indifferent. I want to go back to enforceability, if that's okay. If you look at the AG opinions, it's clear that the Attorney General did not want to become the road police, that the Attorney General felt these are fact questions that need to be addressed by the appropriate authority. I feel that when you look at the statutes and you look at how the DeVille case came about, I would encourage you to not essentially take the invitation to become the road police, to be making the determinations of whether a road is improved or unimproved. And I think you have the ability to say that's a discretionary function based upon the bill for the township. Again, I think it is a very limited scope of authority for the court and place for the courts, as in the DeVille case where you have a situation where it required mandamus, where the township had a clear responsibility, the road was dammed, and something had to be done about it. That's not this case. This case has never been seen by the township. This case has significant, genuine issues of material fact all over the place. Again, reminding the court, this is summary judgment. All these facts should be taken in a light most favorable to the defendant, the non-moving party. These aren't frivolous defenses. There's a picture of the mud bog right in the record. It's Exhibit D, page 185. There's clear questions of fact whether the public can use this. I would encourage the court to look at Exhibit A again, which is page 43 of the record. That road goes to nowhere, and the reason it goes to nowhere is because plaintiff has it cross-fenced, and there's no gate on it. This isn't, again, an easement case. This wasn't brought as an easement case. Plaintiff has not been denied access to use this farm trail. The only thing plaintiff apparently has an issue with, he doesn't want to open an oversized gate, which, again, taking all facts in a light most favorable to the defendant as a non-moving party, that gate is what he asked for. Defendant spent extra money to put a 20-foot swing gate in for him rather than a 16-foot gate. And it is, I understand Rule 408, but it is appropriate for this court to consider because contained in an affidavit submitted for summary judgment by Mr. Patterson says they never discussed a gate. That's not the facts. There are text messages and letters going back and forth. They clearly discussed the gate. He requested it. And that goes directly to the issue of, is it an obstruction?
Was there a Rule 408 objection in front of the trial court?
Yes. And again, the purpose of that is, again, whether or not it's an issue of, is it an obstruction? Because it's the gate that he asked for, and it's the gate that was put in. I have limited time. If there are no further questions, I would just like to conclude by saying I go back to the original argument that I started, that I strongly believe that based upon 31-18-1 and 31-32-9, that this issue rests squarely in the first instance with the Township Board, and accordingly am requesting that the court remand the case back to the trial court so that the Township Board can address it. Secondly, there are significant genuine issues of material fact. Those facts exist with respect to both the prongs that Justice Devaney has asked about, whether or not it's public use or in relation to the alteration in the Tracy case. And again, on remand, it is further request that it be remanded for a trial on the merits with respect to these genuine issues of material fact, if the court finds that the courts have authority over this, and to apply the case law set forth in Tracy with respect to the vehicle travel. Seeing no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case will now be submitted and will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.